All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
All right, we're live. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another Wheel Wednesday podcast. I'm Nick from Koenig. With me at his house is Scott from Koenig. We are in day, I lost track of days, but we're still doing the whole quarantine thing. I'm kind of getting tired of it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's growing on me.
Yeah, enjoying your time at home.
I'm still at the office most of the time. So,
I spend more time at home.
Yeah, well, you spend all your time at home. So for the most part, I'm starting to. It's growing me a little bit. I'm a little bit more of a homebody to begin with. So I think that the interesting part is that my weekends, I'm not going to events right now. I'm not traveling to our California office right now. Yeah. I'm not on a plane as much. And because of that, my weekends are, usually I have kids. So what ends up happening is a lot of times they're filled with little kiddie things, but everything's canceled. So I have a lot of free time. Yeah, I have a lot of free time on the weekends. And I've been using that free time on the weekends to do car stuff and garage stuff and, things that I wanted to do. So, right now it's still, this thing is still in its honeymoon stage of me, but I am getting a little depressed in the fact that I haven't been able to make my usual Harbor Freight runs and
you actually can. You just got to be careful with it. So Harbor Freight is open.
I know.
I had to take a trip there a couple weeks ago because my check engine light came on, and I've never bought an OBD2 scanner. So I finally bought my first one. It's lit. Nice. I went to Harbor Freight, but luckily it was empty and their protocols are actually pretty good. Like they had big screens over everything. The doors were automatic, so I didn't have to touch the doors or anything. Came like a can of Lysol, just sprayed everything down. It was pretty good. We also, I'm gonna plug us right now. We also dropped a video on things you can do with your extra time at home. Leave it in the link below, or maybe do one of those little things that pop up here. And before we continue, if you could like and hit the subscribe button. Almost forgot to do that. Yeah, give us a like. Subscribe button is down here. Hit the bell notification. Really appreciate it.
So we dropped a piece of content last Friday. We're doing our best to drop another piece of content every Friday. So make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel if you're listening to us on iTunes or Google Play. And we are doing our best to bring you a piece of content every Friday. The podcast comes on Wednesday, and we got something else that we're kind of working on up our sleeve, and hopefully that will also be out one day a week, maybe Tuesday. I don't know.
Eventually.
Who knows? We may just surprise you and start dropping stuff. But that stuff is there, and hopefully it will be cool. So it gives you guys something to listen to. And for the people that have been giving us the feedback and commenting and sending different messages and DMs, at least on my Instagram, thank you. I really do appreciate it. The one thing is, this may be something that that is Koenig, whatever it may be, but the one thing you don't know is that all of the podcast parts are really filmed on our own time. Logistically it makes sense. During the week we're working pretty hard to bring you things and do our regular jobs, so a lot of this is done, it's done on our own time. So listen, we appreciate the fact that there's a lot of this content that we've been producing and a lot of the, different topics we talk about on the podcast are informative things. And hopefully the content that we're doing on Fridays, which is a little bit more, which is not a podcast, it gives you some educational piece and some real value, because we're doing our best to make sure that all of the content we bring you, 98% of it is related to wheels and tires and cars. And 2% of it is, kind of more Koenig-specific product information. So, hopefully it's of value, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and it's a mixture of things. Like we have a bunch of ideas of things that we can put out. Some of it's wheel tech, other stuff is not necessarily wheel tech, but like it's still wheel related or like car related. So it's pretty interesting, you know? And like we've dropped a lot of wheel tech videos, another shameless plug. Mm-hmm. We're going to put them in the description. You know, we did stuff like
there's a whole
what
wheel
offset
tech playlist.
You should do. Yeah, there's a whole wheel tech playlist. There's a bunch of videos in there. What offset should you do? Choosing the right brake size. You know, frequently asked questions we get asked about brakes. A versus B. A whole bunch of stuff. You know, changing your wheel size is a big one. Right. You know, and which is a big thing. We talk about like rolling diameter and like why you should keep the same rolling diameter and stuff like that. You know. And some of those actually, in some of the past podcasts that we do, you know, we always like, oh, we'll elaborate on some stuff. We'll elaborate on some stuff. One thing I think we should elaborate on, and this is where I'm going to plug today's topic, is, you know, when changing the rolling diameter of your car, changing your wheel size and stuff like that, just making sure that you keep things in line, because if you don't, you can possibly mess with some of the calibration of your sensors. So, you know, when you change the rolling diameter of your car, or if it's not the right one, you can mess with things like your ABS, your traction control, or if your car comes with TPMS and you don't put TPMS sensors in your tires and stuff like that, like you can mess with the sensors. So let's talk about that a little bit, Scott. Let's get into some of the first things and just talk about like how does not keeping the same rolling diameter mess with the calibration of some of your computer sensors in your car?
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that when we start to break down what overall rolling diameter means, I think we should, for people that haven't seen the sizing video and haven't maybe listened to us talk about this in other pieces of content or podcasts, the overall rolling diameter is basically if you would measure the height of your wheel and tire package, it's the overall height of that wheel and tire package. Now, every vehicle comes from the factory with a predetermined overall rolling diameter. Easiest way to figure it out is punching your stock tire that came on the car, and you will, if you use a tire calculator, they'll give you an actual rolling diameter, 25.2, 26.2, whatever it's going to be, inches.
Right.
That is the overall circumference. That diameter translates to the overall circumference that the vehicle is, you know, looking to see for many different systems. When you say how many systems, the answer really becomes very model specific to your car. It also becomes very specific to the year. And what I mean by that is if you would look at what the difference is between a 99 Civic and a 2020 Civic, there's going to be a light year of difference of what vehicle stability systems and different systems will be using certain functions of the wheel and tire. And that's the difference. So you may have people that say, oh, I changed my wheel tire to something taller and it doesn't do anything. And well, it depends on your vehicle.
Right.
And, you know, it's something that people should keep in mind because there are a lot of messy things that can happen, which is kind of brings us full circle back to your question, or not your question, but what we were talking about what could go wrong.
Right. So I mean, I guess it varies per car, but what I was going to ask is, is there a certain limit you can push on each car where like the rolling diameter isn't exact, but also like it won't mess up like certain sensors? Like do car manufacturers take that into account when making, you know, these numbers up for the computer systems?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not really together too sure where I've ever had, you know, I mean, to have an OE flat out tell you that you can alter tire overall rolling diameter or, you know, expected tire circumference, I would say that's probably not as a publishable fact. But I would say this, that when you figure out what your overall rolling diameter is, there obviously has to be some sort of leeway because tires will wear down. You know, every tire will start marginally taller than it will finish at the end of its life. You know, and that's what a tread depth gauge or something like that would indicate. So I guess what I would say is there probably is an expected range. You know, we used to use a number of, you know, I think it was, you know, it can be altered by like 2% of total height or something like that. But right. Really, when you start to get into it, the idea is to match the tire, your overall rolling diameter, no matter what, almost to the as close as you possibly can. Having a tire that's off by half an inch, I mean, an overall rolling diameter by half an inch, can play massive issues on your car. So if we're going to use, to give people just an idea, I mean, half an inch could be a mile off, you know, quarter of an inch could also be approaching the issue of too tall, you know, maybe, you know, eighth of an inch or 3/16 of an inch really isn't, maybe for most cars isn't really the end of the world. You know, maybe even a quarter of an inch for some cars isn't the end of the world if they go up or down. But definitely when you start to approach north of that, there is a very real chance that your vehicle could just not like what you did to it.
Right.
Right?
Yes. So talking about, I guess, more of the newer cars, since the newer cars is like the same thing, we'll kind of backtrack to all of them. You know, what are some of the things that get messed up? So, like we mentioned, mm-hmm. I mentioned
which,
briefly.
Which systems are kind of looking for that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
let's try, and I don't know if I'm going to get this in the right order, so I apologize, but my intention is let's talk about some of the systems that would have been more primitive to more advanced, because I think if we do it like that, you'll find as the cars get newer, the more advanced systems come online, right? So if we're talking about the more primitive stuff, you know, this may apply to more cars in general because they've been out there longer, right?
Primitive meaning what? Like the more basic things like your speedometer or...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got
you. Yeah, so let's go there. I would say first one is exactly right, your speedometer. Every speedometer is looking to see a certain gearing. And when I say certain gearing, it could be transmission gearing if you're using a vehicle speed sensor that's mounted in the transmission. If it's using another wheel speed sensor, which may be located, you know, in the wheel well, you know, or something like that. All these things are what help determine a vehicle's you know, speed on your gauge cluster. And when you change the overall rolling diameter of the tire, it's now it's going at a different rate than expected. It's, you know, the revolutions per minute are different than would be expected by whatever system is using to compute what should be showing you how fast you're going. So, you know, you can have a car, and a lot of tire calculators will tell you this. It will say, you know, like you change the tire size to something smaller. Let's say you go down half an inch. You know, your gauge cluster may read that you're going 70, but you're really going 65.
Right.
Right? Because the wheel is turning far faster than it was expected to.
Yeah, so it's getting more revolutions within the same...
Time,
yeah, sorry.
But so, all right, so obviously vehicle, you know, vehicle speed or your speedometer would be obviously one issue. Advancing on that scale, I would say the next possible way would be actual gearing. And this may apply more for cars with, you know, LSDs and differentials and all-wheel drive cars and rear-wheel drive cars where you're actually transmitting it. Maybe not as much for front-wheel drive cars with open differentials or, you know, anything like that. But basically what happens is now we're talking about physical gearing, right? Every car is expecting, you know, when you really start to look at all-wheel drive cars and everything is you know, mechanically is structured in a way that it wants to turn at given rates. And when you change that...
Okay, yeah. So that's interesting. I actually didn't even think about that one. So if you go with a smaller wheel and then you are getting more revolutions per minute.
You're making that drivetrain spin faster than it was intended at given speeds, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
Now people will argue, well, what difference does it make? So the drivetrain spins faster. It was meant to spin faster. Well, keep in mind, again, I said differentials and things that change power, like rear-wheel drive cars, where there's going to be some sort of, you know, LSD or something like that. And what I mean by that is that now when you start to talk about power change and power out, output and distributing power, when your wheels start to slip at different rates,
mm-hmm.
when you start to get one tire on the outside that's doing different things, and now you can start to really put some extra strain on your drivetrain. Now, are these things in this particular circumstance, is this extreme? Maybe, right? Like, I understand that, you know, there's so many people that have gotten away with so many different things. I'm just explaining that in theory, these are some of the issues that could go sideways on you. Moving up from there, let's talk about ABS systems. You know, the anti-lock braking systems, since their primitive function and first introduced into cars, they use an ABS pump usually that's modulated. So it's looking – basically, there's some sort of, you know, computer pickup, wheel speed sensor, ABS sensor, you know, tone rings on the axles or something like that to communicate to the car in some fashion exactly how fast a wheel is traveling. And then it uses the computer to determine when a wheel starts to slip. So you get onto that brake, and now it sees the tone rings, and it's expecting to see the car slow down at a certain fashion. And when it starts to see the wheels, you know, the tone rings stop, like it's locked up, but the car is still sensing movement, like a G sensor in the computer or in the car.
Yeah.
That's what activates the ABS modulation pump. So the same thing could happen on ABS systems when you start to change the tire size. You know, it could almost sense that the car is slipping when it's maybe not, maybe, you know, whatever it may be.
And, because it's calibrated.
Slip prematurely.
Because it's calibrated to the certain rolling diameter.
Correct. And that could introduce one of those things where you'll get a false ABS pedal. You know, everybody knows you've been on the pedal, and all of a sudden you get that like kickback, and it like freaks you out because you're not expecting it, you know?
Yeah. Or, you know, your light will just come on and it'll just stop working. It actually happened to me. I was test fitting some wheels. I wanted to see how they would look, and this was a long time ago. You know, I didn't know anything, and I was like, oh, let me see like if the wheels would work on my car, which they didn't, by the way. But you know, I went for a really short drive, maybe like a couple blocks, and instantly my ABS light came on, and I could not for the life of me figure out why it went on. But, you know, after some time, I was like, it definitely has to do with the wheels, did some research, and I was like, oh, okay, I definitely went way too big of a wheel, you know, that's recommended for my car. So that definitely has to be what messed it up.
Yeah, every car is a different type of ABS system. So sometimes it's not necessarily that it even triggers the ABS as much as it triggers a warning for the ABS that something's wrong. And when something's wrong, you will get that, you know, that ABS indicator, which essentially disables the system.
Right.
So that's another possible issue. Getting a little bit more aggressive into some of these newer cars and more technology. Vehicle stability systems, VSS systems, they are, especially nowadays, they are extremely complicated. They are made to really save a driver that's in a bad situation, and they use data that's probably more complex than NASA used to send space shuttles to the moon. And when I say that, I'm almost not exaggerating, and that's crazy, right? Like, I think, just as a side note, somebody can fact check me on this, but I believe that when Ford was talking about something not too long ago, I think last SEMA, and they were saying, when they were talking about the new Explorer or something to that effect, they said in an average vehicle system in a computer, there's something into the effect that, you know, there's a bunch of different modules, but in one module you can have as much as, like, I think, like, you know, like like 13 million pieces of code or something like that. So, now again, fact check me, but it's up there. I mean, it's like a number that I remember when I heard, I was like, that's astonishing. So keep in mind that, you know, the amount of technology that's being worked in some of these vehicles, they're looking for very, very specific circumstances, situations, and they've pre-tested these things under, you know, on ice, on snow, on rain, on, you know, and they've figured out what the combination of, you know, different
hazards,
you know, well, the combination of different, like, you know, what the wheels do under certain circumstances, and program that stuff into the computer so that the computer can essentially match up these functions and determine when there's something issue, and then they're modulating different things. You can drive, and I've seen it with German cars specifically. Some of these German cars are so freaking high tech, and have so much things that you just come a little bit off. You know, I've seen it before. The specific example I saw was somebody had, I forget which Benz, but it was a newer Benz. I feel like it was a bigger model, like an E. It might have even been an S, but basically what they did was no, it wasn't an S. It was definitely a rear wheel drive. It might have been like an SL or something like that. Yeah. Anyhow, they changed the rake of the car by doing a slightly larger, taller tire in the rear and a slightly smaller tire in the front.
Uh-huh.
Primarily because they were looking for the right fit. Like, they were trying to take up some, you know, to really fill up the fender, the quarters in the rear. And then in the front, they were trying to basically slam the car down, you know? Now, yeah, look.
They wanted to get, like, that angle kind of stance.
A little bit. Not my approach, but what ended up happening was there was such a big difference, I guess, to the computer between the speed that the front and the rear wheels were moving together, that the car went into limp mode, and it was just, I mean, it wasn't something that I guess was undoable, just by putting the factory tires back on and trying to roll again. So I don't know. I don't remember what they did, whether they had to go to the dealer or they just had to reset the battery.
What do you mean by limp mode? Like, it was.
So limp mode is a situation where a car's computer will actually put the car into what they call a safe mode. Limp mode used to be the thing that we referred to where
it won't let you go past a certain RPM.
Yeah, or a certain speed.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's. I was just making sure that it meant, mm-hmm. Yeah, my car is actually in limp mode right now.
Which one, your Miata?
No, the CRV. Oh, yeah, crank angle sensor. I got a new distributor today, so hopefully I'll swap that out. Be good to go.
I hope so, because limp mode's no, can't really drive in limp mode.
Well, I can do 60. I can do 60, so.
Well, then you're probably not in limp mode.
Well, I can't rev past like 3,400 RPM.
That's probably because you have a bad pickup sensor. It just doesn't know what to do when it gets into that resolution. But yeah, so vehicle stability systems, and what's interesting about vehicle stability systems is people used to, like, the most primitive form of, I believe this is correct, the most primitive form that I can recall of vehicle stability systems would be traction control. Everybody knows the one little button that started to appear in dashboards where it had the squiggly lines by the tires where you could turn it off and it'd say track off or whatever it was.
That everybody turns off.
That you turn off so that you can get the rental car to do donuts. I mean, not to do burnouts. But then that went away, and a lot of cars don't have that removal button anymore. The systems are just worked in. Or if they do have the button, you know, how true is that button? I know my Z, I feel like you could turn the button off.
Your Z has it?
Yeah, really? So you can push the traction control button off on my Z, and there still is that point where you can get it to engage all by itself even when it's off.
What year is your Z?
So, 06.
Okay, maybe that's why.
So basically, the deal with that stuff is that you know, that might have been the more primitive function, and a lot of those systems again use ABS systems. They use ABS sensors. Right. Because the ABS sensors are tracking the wheel speed and tracking those tone rings on the axles or different things.
Right, so they can all kind of piggyback off that same system and have their own functions within themselves.
Right, but some of the more aggressive and big boy systems now that are on some of these cars, they have sensors all over the place. They're expecting things from all over the place. They use G sensors and this sensor and that sensor and wheel speed sensors, and they put them all together to basically make this algorithm to decide what they should do to the car, right?
Don't some trucks have sensors that track? We spoke about it in one of the last podcasts. What was it?
You're right. You're right. So, like, the new Toyota trucks have these sensors now. They're calibration cameras almost. And they're I believe that they're in the rear quarters near the rear bumpers and different things. But basically what happens is if you alter the track width or the height of a vehicle too much, what it essentially does is it begins to just have a problem. Like, it just, you know, it's not meant to see all the, you know, we talk about, like, you have the systems now on the car, like the onboard braking, right, of a car, mm-hmm. Meaning that if you get too close to another car, the car will automatically brake for you.
Right.
And then you have other cars that have, you know, blind spot indicators and, you know, lane change things so that you don't change lanes when you're not supposed to. Some of them have even gotten to a point where the wheel gets tougher and tougher to turn when it senses you're going into a lane blindly or there's something in your way. All these systems are essentially adjusted off of a given, you know, these given sensors. And so some of the new Toyota trucks have these sensors that are positioned so it detects the height and different things. So if you change wheel and tire packages, which would essentially raise the vehicle by a certain amount or change the width, and now the camera is either blind or having issues picking up that same resolution it's expecting, you could substantially have issues where the car is really difficult to almost function because whether it goes into limp mode or throws codes, or if it starts to modulate ABS pumps or different things. There's all these different things, and there's other vehicles now that have these calibration cameras. But the last I heard, if I'm as up to date as I think I am, is that there was companies now that were beginning to come up with solutions to be able to reprogram those calibration cameras. But when they first came out, the dealer was the only person they could actually recalibrate. And the only reason that I believe that there was a rush to get these calibrations able to be, I don't want to call them hacked, but readjusted, is because when you have a vehicle that's in an accident and a body shop puts your car back together, they have to be able to recalibrate these cameras to get them back to where they should be. And so I believe that and again, don't quote me. If you're a Toyota specialist, you know, feel free to comment in below and let us know exactly how the system works or do some Google or whatever. But off the cuff, that's kind of roundabout of it.
So then how do you go about – and I think this is how we got into it last time in our last podcast. It might have been Changing the Wheel Size podcast that we did. But, you know, what about lifted trucks? Like, how do they – like, what if you want to lift your truck and get, like, you know, go off-roading and buy, like, really big off-road tires for your truck? Like, how do you go about, like, you have to hack that? Or, like, can you go to the dealership and just be like, hey, like, can you recalibrate it? Or do you have to find one of those specialists?
When it comes down to the vehicles that are having these calibration cameras, the answer to that is I'm not sure. I think it depends on each vehicle. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not knowledgeable enough to each model to know exactly the procedure for each one. But I will say on many trucks, and that might be one of the comments and a good example of somebody that would comment and say, well, you know, I changed the wheels and tires from a stock, you know, 30-inch tire and wheel package to, you know, a 37-inch wheel package, and my car drives without any issues. I mean, it's possible. A lot of those trucks, you know, they didn't have the huge limitations. And the reason was because a lot of trucks, and a lot of people don't know this, is that what you don't realize is that, like, when you start looking at trucks, if you're not a truck person, a lot of trucks and OE trucks, whether it be, you know, a Ford F-150 to a Ford 250, F-250 to 350 or whatever it is, 450, they're using a lot of common parts, but what they're not using is all the same wheel and tire sizes. Like, you could have an F-150 right. in the same year that may have had different size tire options. And I'm not talking about wheel size options. Those obviously is what you're expecting. But even if you go into the, you know, the late 90s, you could see an F-150 rolling on the street that had one package where it looked like the wheels were just in, you know, the wheels and tires just didn't even look right for the truck. Like, it was really small. And then you could see another wheel and tire package that really was a little bit taller and more filled out. You know, maybe it's one of their, you know, 4x4 packages or whatever it may be. But a lot of these, you know, especially with the trucks, they gave more leeway for them to, you know, put these wheel packages onto cars and trucks. And the older cars you go, the less resistance or restriction you'll have in doing this. However, you should still get into good practice. The correct rule of thumb, full disclosure, is try to match your overall rolling diameter as close as you possibly can. And if you start to differ within any marginal amount, contact a wheel and tire professional and make sure it won't be a problem.
Right.
That's good.
We spoke about rolling diameter. I mean, it's good to know, you know, like these are things that we don't really think about when changing wheel size. It's something I didn't think about, and I learned my lesson the hard way. So it's good to know this stuff beforehand, so that way you can prevent mistakes or things malfunctioning and then have to deal with, what did I do? Now I have to call somebody or start Googling stuff and figure out and see if anybody knows like what happened or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, it's good stuff to know. Now, I also mentioned, one of the other things that you need to think about is your TPMS sensor. So, can you use the ones from your stock wheels when putting new wheels on your car, or like when changing the wheels, or do you have to get specific ones for those wheels that'll work for your car? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's like, I don't know, you know, and maybe we shouldn't go directly into this topic on this podcast. Maybe we should almost save this one.
Make it
a little bit. I mean, TPMS is a whole other system. Some cars use sensors, some cars don't use sensors, you know, Volkswagens and some of the European cars, they actually, again, use some sort of wheel speed sensor to detect the height of the tire. And when they see the height of the tire differ, that's what throws the TPMS light on. You'll notice most of those cars, though, have what they call a reset button. It's usually in the glove box or something to that effect. And the purpose of that is that when you get everything set, you refill your tires, whatever it may be, you hold the reset button down, and it takes almost like an image of what height all the tires are at, so it knows where the differing amounts are.
Okay, so that way it can record like, oh, you're low on air. So, but then how does that work if your tire tread goes down? So what if it takes the image, but like you keep your air pressure the same all around? Is it possible for that to still go off if you run your tires bald or something?
I mean, could there be? I guess there could be. I don't know every vehicle system's, exact tolerances. But what I will say is that for the most part, they're pretty well margined so that, you know, running a tire bald usually won't be the thing to trigger it. And many cars that have that reset button, if you were changing wheels and tires and you ended up going up just by a marginal amount, you know, less than quarter of an inch or whatever it may be, and you hold that reset button and they're all equal in the correct tire pressure when you hit that reset button, that many times that's the new benchmark. And it will then, and I think the numbers like on most of these cars is it's when the height of the tire or the or pressure is sensed that you lost about 30% air pressure, whatever that figure of difference is, that's usually when it triggers a TPMS light.
Gotcha.
So I think maybe we'll attack the TPMS thing in another podcast. Excellent. Because first off, we've given this one ample time, and also I think we did justice to kind of talk about some of the issues that you could potentially have with, I guess this is not using the right tire size, but we, pretty what much. We're going to call this, we don't know. We don't know. You know, we wing it and something, this is what we won.
Something to catch our attention. Well, I honestly feel like I learned a lot from this.
Right. Podcast. Well, that's really the point. Today's topic is actually Nick learns a lot. Yeah.
That's going to be the title.
That's right. But
what did Nick learn? That should be the title of most of our podcasts. No, but like in all
honesty, we'll have the song like comes up. It's like din 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 din, and then Nick's face is like this.
No, but I mean, in all honesty, like a lot of the podcasts we do, I feel like there's like that basic knowledge that I have there, and it's like, oh, we get into this whole conversation and like general questions. Like most of the time when I ask questions, like it's because I actually like want to kind of elaborate on things because I don't fully understand it. It's not, you know, it's not one of those things I do like, oh yeah, podcast, I'm just asking questions. Like, no, like I'm genuinely, you know, picking up something new. So that's cool. I'm glad I learned stuff. I hope everybody watching at home learned stuff. Right. If you did, like, comment, subscribe, let us know what you learned that you didn't know. Sure. Anything you want us to elaborate on.
Yeah, whatever you got, you know, throw it in there. So I think we're good here, right? We can.
Yeah, I think we're good here. I think we could wrap this up.
Yeah, so what I will say to everybody out there, if you've made it this far, if you did, first off, thank you. Congratulations. I feel blessed that you've made it to the end. But you know, listen, some housekeeping things. We go live on Instagram every Wednesday around 3 p.m. Eastern. Check out the Koenig Wheels USA on Instagram story where we announce what time we'll be going on every day, just in case. It's always 3 p.m., but every once in a while, if we have some issue come up, we do announce it right there. It also will be on we'll go live on Facebook, providing that I have a second phone because I'm soloing this for a little while. but we try to do your best and answer questions. If you have questions, if you want to answer them, please stop by the live stream. It's the easiest way that we can answer your question with a ton of detail. And if you don't understand,
and get a fast
response. And if you don't understand, you can really follow it up with another question, and we'll be happy to answer them. And we understand and we recognize that, you know, like especially like with email, I'm dealing with a few people right now that have sent some questions in through email, whether it be about fitment, and we're going back and forth, and you know, it's been days, right? But you know, you may not be able to get me on the phone, you know, all the time, or Nick on the phone, but like you can come to the live stream and ask questions and have them answered. And so, you know, if you're around on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, swing through. Come hang out. Ask some questions. And if you don't have any questions, maybe you'll think of one. And if you don't have one that you think of, just come by and say hello. Right?
Yep. And Friday, stay tuned for
every Friday.
Dropping a new piece of content every single Friday.
Yep. Notification bell is just increasingly important, because if you hit it, it will tell you every time we drop something.
You get notified.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
It's funny. I actually so on my own YouTube channel, I actually like did subscribe, which I like just because like I did it a while ago. And every time we upload a video, as soon as we hit publish, I get a notification on my phone. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. The video is live. So that's like my confirmation of knowing that. All right, cool.
Yeah,
it's
live.
So hit the bell, get notified, know when we drop new stuff, new podcasts, new Friday Wheel Tech content. Yeah.
Get in on it. So I guess that's about it. We hope everybody's doing well out there, and we hope that you're taking care of each other and yourself. And for those who have started going back to work, be safe, socially distance, please. Wear a mask, even if you feel that it may violate some rights. Listen, here's the thing. I don't want to do this again. I mean, like, whatever the case may be, violate your rights, this, that, the other thing. I'm not talking about personal opinion. I'm not advocating for or against. I'm just saying, hey, look.
Get it done
once.
Let's
not do this again.
And not have to ever do it again.
This is aggravating, and it's really difficult. And whatever the outcome may be, I just don't want to do it again, you know? Anyhow, if you wouldn't mind, do Uncle Scott a favor here, and you know, just social distance. I mean, I don't know. Listen, we're from New York. It's as hard as it's here in LA and all these. So I get it, but I just don't want to do this again. So if you wouldn't mind, you know, just try to do your best, and your best is what we'll think. You know. With that said,
and on that note,
yeah, pretty much. On that little rant, we're out of here. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other, and we will catch you back here next Wednesday. You know, where we'll do this whole thing all over again. All right, Nick. Catch you later.
Peace out.
Peace.